Welcome to The Liberated Life, the podcast for women who are done pretending that they have it all figured out and are ready to live with more freedom, clarity, and courage. I'm Lucy Maeve, your guide on a journey through the unspoken parts of healing, desire, and self-discovery. This is a place to be seen, heard, and held, where we embrace all the complexities and contradictions of being fully alive. No masks, no shortcuts, just the real work and real liberation. Hello, my darling one. We are back for another interview episode, and I'm really excited to share this conversation with you. I have the wonderful Naomi Morgan on the podcast today. And the reason that I wanted to bring Naomi into this podcast was because she did a whole flip 180 of her life at 37. And to me, I have been asked a million times over, like, how did you find the courage to leave a job when you were 30, blah, blah, blah. And when I heard that she did it at 37, I was like bowing down to the courage in her, because there's so much stuff that we've absorbed about like how we should have our lives all sorted by the time we're 30. And actually just freeing ourselves from that and freeing myself from that in many ways in this conversation with Naomi was really liberating. And I hope it will be liberating for you guys too. This is a super honest and real conversation. There is no like overselling, over glamorizing the reality of what it takes to change careers, especially when you're going into something where you're starting from scratch again. So if you're looking for a real conversation, which is in no way filtering out the grit, this is it. I had such a beautiful time talking to Naomi and really connecting over some of the experiences we've had in our own journeys of setting up businesses and redefining our lives. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. And to give you a little intro to Naomi, she is a women's empowerment coach and coach trainer who 6 years ago took a bold leap of faith, leaving behind a safe career in teaching, selling most of her belongings and moving to a country without speaking the language or knowing how she would make a living. What followed was a powerful journey through uncertainty, reinvention, and ultimately freedom. Naomi now runs a thriving coaching business and helps women break free from societal expectations and reconnect with their authenticity, confidence, and purpose. She holds a master's in positive psychology and coaching psychology, is a professional certified coach with the ICF and senior practitioner EMCC, and has trained over 1,000 coaches over the past 4 years. So you're in safe hands. I hope you enjoy this episode. It is always an honor to be here with you. I'm sending you so much love and I will speak with you soon. Beautiful. Okay, so we are here. I have to be honest, my sweet listeners, I totally screwed up all of the tech stuff around this interview, and poor Naomi has been like being sent about 16 million different links to get on here, but we made it. We made it, so it's all good. And I'm really, really excited to have this conversation with you, because when you sent me the answers to the various prompts I sent over, I was listening to them and reading them through and just thinking like, there was so much medicine in your words and your honesty and everything you shared. So I'm really, really excited for everything that you have to share today. And I know that everyone is going to learn so much from you. So to start with, you had a whole life shift at, was it 37?
Yeah.
And first of all, I'd love to just know, like, what happened with that? Like, what was going on in your life at 37 that made you think, like, I need to have a huge shift?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like a lot of people hit this in their 40s or 50s, and I feel like I got in there a little bit younger. But I was working as a head of psychology in lots of different schools, well, for the previous 15 years. And the job load, as anyone knows, for a teacher is quite intense. And I was working sort of 60 plus hours a week. And I was feeling like I was on the edge of burnout. I'm very protective over my own mental health because I have a family that have had serious mental health problems, and Therefore, I know I'm genetically predisposed to be at higher risk than maybe the average person. So I've always had it in the back of my mind to not push myself too close to the edge. And I felt like I was on the edge. So, and I think, but on the flip side of that as well, although teachers do get a lot of holidays, you're very restricted actually for the rest of the time because your holidays are dictated. So I had no freedom. You can't just go away on holiday whenever you want. You can't go to people's hen do's, weddings if they get married abroad. And there was so much I felt like I was missing out on because I was so restricted. So those two things combined, I would say, were the catalyst to make me think, do you know what, there's got to be a different way than this, than just working 60, 70 hours a week all term, just about surviving until half term, and then being ill at half term because I was working so much during the term time. And yeah, I just thought there's just got to be more to life than this. And so I felt like I just really needed to have a big change and to try and find some more balance and a healthier way of living.
I'm like, you talk about it with such like ease and grace. And I'm sitting here, like I work with a lot of people that want to make big transitions in career, I worked in investment banking for 10 years and then quit when I was 30. And people say to me like, oh my God, you quit when you were 30. Like, how the hell did you do that? That's so courageous. And I recognize there's a lot of like dogma around age and I hate that that exists. Mm-hmm. But when you share with me that you got to a point at 37 of being like, I'm going to make a shift, that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, it does. But I was just ready for it. I just, like I say, because I think my background particularly, that was probably the biggest driver. And so I've always been really conscious of protecting my mental health. And I know that for some people, once they're pushed over the edge and they develop a serious mental health problem, you can't necessarily undo that. You have to manage that for the rest of your life. And I just didn't want to get to that point. So I'd say that was probably the biggest driver where I'd think, no, this is too far. Like, yeah. I'm not going to put myself at that risk. And then, you know, that can really impact the rest of my life. And I'm not going to allow that to happen. And I'd studied, you know, I taught psychology anyway. And so I'd done a lot of researching and specializing in personally in resilience so that I could build my resilience and make sure that I could protect myself from developing serious mental health problems as much as I possibly could. But I think that there was just this really strong like underlying feeling that I just didn't want to be pushed over the edge, and I felt like I was.
And where are you based? So you were in the UK when you were
in Midlands, in Coventry.
What do you do now and where are you based?
Well, I'm now in the south of Spain in a beautiful village called Majaca Pueblo. And I am a coach trainer, a coach, and I run some of my own courses online. So fully remote.
Oh, my goodness. So for those of you, I'm not recording the video for this, but Naomi is currently in this like beautiful white room and you can see the light shining through the windows and it looks so beautiful. And I'm looking out of the window here and it's like kind of grey and autumnal, even though we are recording at the end of July. So I am feeling hugely envious of that beautiful life. And I also want to move us into the space of honesty here, because I obviously made a big shift when I was 30 and I ended up moving to Mexico initially. Then I moved to Cape Town and then I came back to London. And a lot of the time, like in the early stages of me having made that move, I had so many people messaging me being like, oh my God, like it's amazing. Look at your life. Like you're doing all this cool stuff. You're running your own business. And there were a lot of points during that time where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not making any money and I'm swanning around pretending that everything's fine. And I wonder, was that just me or did you experience that as well?
No. That was definitely us. So I moved to Spain with my partner. Luckily, he was very up for it. When I came back from work one day, I was like, I am done. Like, I'm done. Let's just move to Spain. He was like, okay. So we did. And we literally sold all our possessions, our houses, just everything, anything that we could fit into our car. And then we drove over and we started our new life. So initially we had savings, not a huge amount of savings, but we had enough savings. So the first year we lived our best life. We basically lived like we were on holiday. We just were quite careless, really, and just spent all of our savings. And then when we got to the end of the first 12 months, we were like, OK, now we're in trouble because we've got no savings and no jobs. We hadn't been working. And so then the seriousness kicked in and it was like, oh, OK, what are we going to do? And so first off, Leon got a job in an estate agent's, and that kept us afloat for a while. And I was, you know, we were doing like cleaning jobs, karaoke, quiz nights, hilarious, anything to make.
Oh my God.
We actually carried on those quiz nights until literally, I think the beginning of this year, the end of last year, we kept them going. They were actually great fun. We had quite a big following in the end. But anyway, so yeah, so we were doing anything to make money, but we weren't making merch. We were literally, Leon was only part-time at the estate agents. And so we were living on €800 a month for both of us and running a house and a car.
Is that including rent?
I'd bought an apartment out here with the equity from the house that I'd sold. There was no rent involved, but all the bills, obviously, and running the house and food and everything. So we lived on, peanuts. So we had no money. We literally had no money. We'd go out and share a menu d'Aldea that was €10 between us and have a bottle of water with it. It was like, it was really, really tough at times. And, you know, struggling to pay bills, you know, if an unexpected bill came in, like the car broke down, it'd be like, oh my God, how are we going to pay? And so it was really, really tough in the beginning. And so that's when I thought, what am I doing? You know, I was trying like €6 an hour bar jobs and like, this is not going to help me to earn much money. So I'm like, right, I'm actually educated. Maybe I should use my education a little bit more wisely. Then I started doing tutoring online. So that brought some more money in. And then I actually decided to go back to university and do a master's online. And that was amazing because I started it in January 2020 and in March the world shut down. So I had a really, it's a positive psychology and coaching psychology. So I had this really beautiful positive focus all the way through lockdowns to complete my master's. So it worked out really well.
Wow. And you talked a little bit at the beginning about like the necessity to build resilience before making a big shift like that. And it's interesting because I hadn't really, I mean, I had done like some coaching training and I had therapy and stuff, but I wasn't really aware of the concept of like resilience, particularly before I quit my job. But I recognized that there was definitely a steep learning curve for me in that regard. And there still is to a certain degree running my own business. I wonder like what supported you with your resilience, because to me, as soon as you start talking about like trying to live off €800 a month between two people, my whole nervous system is like, oh my God.
Yeah, I think a certain level of self-trust for sure helped, because when we were like moving, when we were thinking of moving to Spain, I thought, what's the worst that could happen really? Is we go, we fail, it doesn't work out, we can't make money or whatever, and maybe we have a year out there and then we come back. Well, then we'd be able to find somewhere to live, you know, even if it was staying with family or friends to begin with. I could get another teaching job anywhere. You know, they're so short on teachers. So I could get another job. Leon could get another job. And we'd just go back to the life we had. And we would have just had a year or two's adventure. So I think that always was in my mind, because it's, and so that kind of took a lot of the worry away. And then the rest of it is, I don't know, there is that deep trust that I can make it work, because I know that I'm a hard worker and I'm not too proud to do any job, as you can tell from the 6-year-old bar job to cleaning villas at 11 p.m. at night in the summer and then getting back up and just starting the next one at 8 a.m. the next morning, you know, in 30-40 degree heat. You know, it's not, they're not glamorous jobs, but I'm quite happy to do whatever job I needed to do to pay the bills. And I think knowing that about myself was probably enough to know that I'd figure it out. I'd find, if there was work around, I would find it and I would do it, whatever it was. So I feel like that kind of knowing myself well really helped me to dig deep and just have that sort of grit and think, I've got through worse. And so, you know, this is just an adventure I've chosen to go on. And so it's just reframing it, I think. But that's not to say that I didn't have complete freakouts and breakdowns. There was a lot of that, you know, if you fed into the scarcity mindset, which we would sometimes when you've got no money, then it's very easy to spiral. But I think I'm a natural optimist, so I'm quite good at then pulling myself out of that and thinking, right, no, come on, what can I actually do? What are my choices? Let's go and just go again.
It's so true, and it's so interesting, the piece around scarcity mindset, because of my background working in investment banking, I attract quite a lot of people that come from quite high earning careers, and they're trying to leave. Actually, to be honest, I'm now kind of moving into more relational work, but for a long period I was working with people that wanted to leave jobs. And it was always so fascinating to me, because a lot of the people that I would work with objectively had a lot of money, like would have a huge amount of savings, would be able to support themselves without working for a good few years. Like, the money was there, but it proved to me so much, and I had to work through this in myself, that it is actually not in any way linked to the number in your bank account. It's all linked to your mindset around money. Because I'd also have people that, like, had, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine, and she had, like, quit her job and was, like, swanning around, and she said to me, she's like, I've got like 300 euros left in my account. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I'll be fine, I'll just figure it out. And there I was working with people who had like £1 million saved in their bank account, and they're like, I couldn't possibly leave this job, like, I would die and end up under a bridge. I was like, I don't think we're talking about money right now, are we? We're talking about something completely different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had to work a lot on my money mindset. I was really had a scare, you know, I had much more of a scarcity mindset. And I think this whole moving to a different country, you don't speak the language and you've got no friends here, it's a great journey of self-discovery. Because when I did get a job as the coach trainer working full time, I started to feel I was burning out again. And then I realized that I was the common denominator, and that actually it wasn't necessarily the job that's burning me out, that I'm burning me out because I have no boundaries. And so that was a really great realization where I'm like, oh, I can't blame it on anyone else because it's me doing it to me. And so I've done a lot of then inner work on boundaries and self-worth and money mindset, because it's all linked. and then charging what I'm worth and that type of thing, as I've graduated with the master's, but then went on to become individually accredited, you know, really build up all my coaching knowledge, trained as a coach supervisor. So there was a lot of that hyperachiever energy in me as well, like trying to prove myself, like, oh, look, I'm so good. But it was really about external validation rather than anything else. And then once I've, again, all of this stuff that I then realized about myself, I could then learn to drop it. So now I can go into that abundance mindset. And it's not to say these things don't show up. I think it's always these are the things that will show up in different ways that you're always going to work on, peel back another layer. But it's fascinating what you learn about yourself when you're willing to sort of reflect on where all these things come from.
Yeah.
Because we can have all the accreditations, you know, qualifications in the world, and then still go out there and charge peanuts. And I've had to have some really difficult conversations about upping my wages at the coach training company and things like that on occasions, because, you know, it's just about me putting my boundaries out and being like, I've worked really hard to up my qualifications or experience or whatever it is. And actually, now I know I am worth this, like, higher wages. But and they were difficult conversations because, I'd never had to have them before. So I didn't even know how to communicate. And they were great. They responded really respectfully and agreed. But it's funny how when you've never taught to have these types of conversations or self-reflection or anything, it's just wild what comes up in it all.
It is. It's so, I hilariously, when I left banking, thought that I didn't have any money issues. I was like, I don't have any money mindset stuff. I'm like really abundant. I don't have any scarcity. And then I'd have like weird flashbacks to when I was earning like over six figures. And I was like afraid of buying, like, I used to have these like moments of contraction buying a round of coffees for people, because it was like, I don't know, in Canary Wharf, coffees used to end up being like crazy expensive, but like spending £40 on a round of coffees for the desk or whatever, I would like go into contraction. And I hadn't even realized that that was happening. And the more I'm like really diving into my own money stuff at the moment and realizing it is such a strong nervous system response, and actually that I have just entirely linked money to safety, and how safety in its essence is like a mammalian body response that is impacted by you. It's like you could sit and have, and this is, I am proof of this, you could sit and have like however much money coming in every month and it will have no impact on your nervous system. Like, or you could sit and like really sit with yourself and find safety in yourself and have 300 euros in your bank account like my friend did and feel absolutely fine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now, if the bank account starts to get a bit lower than I'd like, I'm much more likely to see it as a challenge and be like, oh, okay, so I'd like a little cash injection. So what can I create that people would really like to purchase? And because I love creating resources and courses, and, you know, I've got a lot of coaches that I've trained, I'm like, oh, God, what sort of course might, you know, one of the coaches that I know really enjoy studying for the day, I could just do a one day thing, charge whatever, invite them on, and just have, you know, even if it was just like a few thousand pound cash injection, then, you know, I could probably do that. So now it's like more of a challenge than like, oh my God, I feel like, you know, the balance is getting low, how will I do it? Yeah. So you're right, I think nervous system is a huge thing. And if I feel like I'm triggered now, then I will, the first thing I do is start focusing on regulating my nervous system, being like, right, okay, this is a fear response, we know what's happening here, let's re-regulate. And then we're going to, because then you can access the creative part of your brain that's actually going to help you find the solution. But when you're in fight or flight, that part of your brain goes offline. And so all you're going to do is spiral into negative, you know, thoughts. And that's not going to help you solve the issues. Yeah.
Totally.
It's amazing what you learn about yourself in the process, isn't it?
Honestly, like, I sometimes think back over the last 5 years since I left that job, even outside of the learning process of setting up a business, like, just the stuff that I've been faced with in myself, in like cutting myself off from the like normal track, and like feeling sometimes like I'm hacking through a forest and I don't really know where I'm going, being like, wow, I really have evolved a huge amount in the last 5 years, way more than I did sitting in an office job in Canary Wharf.
Yeah, because you don't have the time. That's the thing. You don't have the time for self-reflection as much, because, you know, if you're working those 60, 70 hours a week, when is there time for that? You know, you're just too tired by the time you finish, and then you want to try and have some quality time with people you care about, and your time's gone and you're back at work.
Can I ask, you told me in your intake form that during this period of you, I think it was when you had moved to Spain, that your partner had a breakdown and that he couldn't work for, was it for a year?
Yeah.
You mentioned. And like, as you wrote that, it's really interesting because I'm in a period right now. My partner moved over to London to be with me from South Africa, and he's currently looking for work. So we're going through that dynamic of like him not working, me working, and recognizing the challenges that can show up in that dynamic. And I'm wondering, what was that like for you, that period?
It was really tough for so many different reasons, partly because I didn't have such a support network out here at the time. I did have some friends, but not as many friends as back in the UK. Like, back home, I've got lots of circles of friends that I've been friends with for 25 plus years, 35 years, you know. Whereas here, I had a few friends that were good friends, but yeah, just not have the same kind of support. And obviously, it's like heartbreaking watching the person you love go through something like that, where they just can't leave the apartment, because if it had like severe anxiety and depression, just not being able to function, he just couldn't take part, and he would literally have all the shutters closed, everything is just sitting in a dark room. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like really bad. But he had his own business, so I was working full-time and he ran his own business. But when he went under, and obviously I had to, like, I was trying to help and to contact all his customers and say, you know, look, he's had a breakdown and I don't know how long he's going to be out for, and if there's any outstanding work, he will sort it out when he's back at work, but right now I don't know when that's going to be, and I know this isn't ideal, but I really don't know what else I can say, you know. You know, if you need to get the work finished by someone else, you know, go ahead, whatever. But people are like, oh, okay, But then a week later, so when are they coming to do the work? And I'm like, this isn't a week fix. You know, he's had a complete mental breakdown. This is going to be months and months.
Yeah.
And people just really didn't understand. And they just kept messaging and calling and messaging and calling and messaging. And I was trying to work full time. I'm trying to take care of him. I'm trying to look after the animals. And in the end, it just became so overwhelming that I felt like I was I was going to join him if I wasn't careful, because I just had no downtime and the stress of it all. And like you say, trying to keep afloat financially, because, you know, all the pressures became a lot. And in the end, I just said to them all, look, I'm not going to respond to all these messages. I can't. It's not fair on me. I told you what the situation is. I'm, you know, when I know more, I'll tell you more. But until then, you know, I'm not responding to these messages. I just had to put some boundaries in. And then, yeah, so, I mean, like I say, it's difficult because at that point, it was before I realised that I was the person burning me out as well. So I hadn't come to this realisation yet. So I was working all the hours and, you know, really didn't have the good boundaries really that I should have with work or anything. And then, but eventually, I think after a few months, it was, I said to Leon, right, you know, we need to start getting you some support, you know. So he did actually go and get some support. And I sort of very gently encouraged him to do things that I knew that would help, which was getting up really early before anyone was about, because he had anxiety about seeing anyone. And just going for big walks, like in nature with the dog. Because I mean that it's as effective as antidepressants. He had been to the doctor and got support and stuff as well, and so very carefully and delicately sort of helped him, encouraged him to do those things. And honestly, the morning walk was a game changer, because that really helped him to start getting outside more. So that got reduced his phobia of going outside a little bit more, and eventually he got better and. Yeah, by the end of the year, he went back. But yeah, it was a solid year that he was off work. So it was challenging to, yeah, for sure. But I think it brought us closer together, because we really had to support each other. But that's not to say that sometimes it wasn't really challenging, because sometimes I just needed the support to go externally and sort of, you know, and have an outlet. I think I did so much journaling in that time, and I did go and see a counsellor of my own, just so that I could have some, you know, a space for me to talk about things, but without burdening him.
That is so much to be carrying for that long period of time.
Yeah,
and to be like, especially when you're abroad as well, and you mentioned not having like a full support network around you. And also that dynamic, which I massively struggle with, being someone that has a tendency towards being slightly more in her masculine, to like the tendency towards going to fixing, and to wanting to, like, when you were talking about how amazingly compassionate and gentle you were with your encouragement, did you ever have that desire to go into like hardcore fixer mode, or is that not quite your jam?
No, it was my jam previously, in my family home upbringing, because there was serious mental health problems. I was definitely the fixer person, but because I'd done a lot of work on that particularly, and learning about the drama triangle, and transactional analysis and certain things that really helped me to understand the behaviour a bit more, then it helped me to step back. Because, and I teach this to all the coaches that I train now, because I say, ultimately, when you go into fixer mode, you're seeing the other person as a victim. And so that helps them to stay in victim mode, because, you know, that they're like, okay, fine, you fix me. And it doesn't help them to take any personal responsibility. And actually, so if you think of like transactional analysis, they go into child mode, basically. It's adult, parent, adult, child. And we want to meet them in adult mode. Adult to adult is the best way you can communicate. So
can we just, I love transactional analysis, and I would love it if you, and like hearing you talking about it, and she's like, I'm thinking she knows her stuff on this. Could you explain to any of the wonderful people listening in basic terms, the adult, parent, child stuff in transactional analysis?
Yeah, I can do it really simply. So basically, it sees that we have three different ego states. So each person has three different ego states: parent, adult, child. So parents at the top, adult in the middle, child at the bottom. And you both have those ego states. So when you're coming together for communication, then you can either meet in the middle, which is adult to adult, and that's where you get the best communication and outcomes, where you both take personal responsibility for your actions. And, you know, that's where the most success comes from. But what happens is if one person drops into one of them, you often go opposite. So if somebody's coming to you more in a child ego state, which can be very common if they are unwell, because we all kind of go back into children, don't we, when we're unwell, look after me. And so they can sort of present as more sort of childlike. And sometimes that is not taking personal responsibility for their actions as well. And that's sometimes because they don't feel capable at that time, because they're a bit fragile, particularly with mental health. And so that can push you into parent ego state, because that's opposite. So the bottom to the top. And so that's when you go into it's over nurturing, you know, parent. And so you're like, okay, no worries, I'll fix you, let me scoop you up, you know. And it comes from a really well-meaning place, you know. But then sometimes if that person's not doing what you want, then you flip into the other parent ego state, which is actually critical parent.
Oh, this is what I do. I have to work so hard on this. My critical, I'll start by being nurturing parent, and then suddenly I'll be like, you just need to do it better.
Yeah, and and that's what happens. So you go into that critical, and then that doesn't help them to come up to adult either, you know, neither do. So rather than doing either of those, the best thing you can do is try and empower them to believe in themselves to join you at adult. So instead of fixing, you say, I'm here if you need support. You know, I know that you can do this. You can bring yourself back up. You know, there's support out there. You know, I know you're a strong person. You've got resilience, you know, whatever it is. You just keep building them up, you know, trying to help build them up and remind them of their strengths and their capabilities and what, you know, all their lovely, beautiful qualities. Because in that way, they're much more likely to join you in the adult ego state and take their responsibility and just believe in themselves more. So we're sort of building their resources up rather than trying to save them.
It's also so interesting because when I've dived in deeper to my own tendency to go into parent, which is very strong, there's also this like egoic attachment to being like slightly superior. So it's like I'm so useful when I'm in parent because I can somehow tell you, and I'm saying this in jest to those who can't see the video, but like somehow that I'm useful and I'm like more important. I don't really know what it is, some ego trip about like, probably feeling safer in some ways, being the authority rather than being an equal. And I actually look at that like in a lot of not only romantic relationships, but like in friendships as well. I've had a tendency to be a fixer often, like would like swoop in when there was challenge and be like, yes, I'm a great person to be here in challenge because I can be somehow helpful.
Yeah.
And therefore I'm worthy because I'm being helpful.
Absolutely. And that's what it is. It's that external validation again, isn't it? It's like, because what you want is people be like, oh, thank you so much. You saved me.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, thanks. I'm such a good savior, aren't I? Yeah, I have exactly the same. And I honestly, look, I don't think any of us are perfect on these things, but it's helped so much. I think training as a coach as well really helped, because it's exactly what we do in coaching, build up their resources so that they can go away and do things on their own. It's not about making them reliant on you. And so I think that's really helped me to then take that into other relationships and see it from that perspective. It's fascinating, this stuff. And like I say, you're always peeling back an extra layer.
It's really very gritty. And I find it also interesting being a coach because at times I notice this perfectionism in me, especially having a brand that's online, that's like this little voice in my head that's like, but Lucy, you're the authority. So you should be perfect at this stuff and you should never go into your trauma and you should never like parent your partner or do any of this stuff. And I have to really check myself. And that's probably in part why I try to keep most of my communication and my brand like as honest as I can, because I fell foul when I was initially going into this work, like in guruizing or like really pedestalizing certain coaches and thinking like they're enlightened and they must have like only perfect relationships and never do anything wrong, in inverted commas. And I wonder, like, there can be this tendency, I think, in our industry to perform healed,
mm-hmm.
or like perform being really happy and everything's perfect. How do you resist that urge?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, the sort of I definitely had more of that, where it's trying to be really perfect and to only show, you know, the good side of things. But I think, like you, I enjoy watching people who are real and who share the sort of downside as well, who don't just perform, who say sometimes, you know, they've had a rubbish day and look, this is how I've led myself through it. And I do try to share some of that online. You know, I'll say woke up and I had no sleep and I woke up and I was so grumpy. And so I've just got up and watched the sunrise on the beach, because there's just no way that I can be grumpy after watching the sunrise on the beach. It's just impossible. And so there's, you know, just to show that I don't wake up like, I am a real optimist, but you know, my partner will tell you I do not wake up with, you know, sunshine and every single day, because I'm human. So I think sharing things like that are really important. And actually recently, just a couple of months ago, I actually had a miscarriage and I shared that online. So because I'd found out I was pregnant, I knew it was high risk. And I was just in the middle of like launching some of my courses, I had two courses, and I didn't know if I was going to have to push them back or what was going to happen. And in the midst of it, I just thought, it's more difficult for me to lie around something like this and make up a reason why, I've stopped launching, but also for the people who are on the course, like, I might have to push it back, but I might not. And because make up some reason why. And it just felt even more stressful in a time that was already, you know, I had a lot going on. So I just said to, you know, Leon, do you mind if I share honestly with people what's happening? And he said, no, go for it. So I just shared. And so, I said that I was pregnant, but it was risky. And I didn't know, I'd started to bleeding, so I wasn't sure what was going to happen. Mm. And then I did miscarry and I shared that as well. And people were just so amazing and supportive. And they, you know, and I said, I'm not the kind of person who thinks that you shouldn't talk about these things, because so many people go through it and then they stay really isolated in shame. They never tell anyone, and then they don't get the support they need. And, you know, so I just shared it and people were absolutely incredible. And they, you know, so many people reached out and said, oh my God, I've gone through this and I went through it alone. And I really appreciate you talking about it openly and sharing, even though it's difficult. And that allowed me to then take the time off I needed. And then when I was ready, you know, I could come back and be like, right, these are the dates now for the courses, you know, let's get back on track. But people were so understanding, and I just felt like it was important to be honest and vulnerable.
That takes so much courage in a period like that to be open, especially online. But like, what leadership to have, and really like, there's something about humanity in it as well, of like the real challenges that we all go through. And like, it sounds like in that experience, you were able to take the necessary time that you needed to really honor that process as well, and to kind of model that to people in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I took a few days off, and then, I'd spent a whole week when I was bleeding and I wasn't sure what was happening. I had to wait a week and see whether I'd miscarried or not. So it was a really like difficult time. So that week I took off. And then once I found like that had been a miscarriage, I took a few more days off. So I'd spent about 10 days where I'd just done nothing but rest, because I just knew my body really just needed rest, and that was it. And then after that, I felt like, okay, I'm going to come back and like just do, you know, one-to-one clients and light work. And because actually it was nice to have a positive focus. And I think it's important sometimes to, you know, I really connected to myself and thought, what do I need now? Do I need more time off? Or actually, is it going to be better for me to go back to work and have something that's going to bring that light back into my life, you know, at a time where it's been really sad? And I did then start going back to work, and I was really grateful for it. And it was the right decision for me. But, you know, I think you really have to decide what's right for you as an individual.
No, definitely. And in many ways, like, it's a balance with running your own business, because I sometimes find not having a boss there can be a part of me that's like, oh, I can just take, not with anything like having a miscarriage, but like, I can just take some time off because I work for myself and whatever. And having this, I almost have to work with like my internal parts of like the strong, loving parent inside of me who's like, no, Lucy, it's time to get up and go and do some work now. When I want to just be like, no. But also the beauty in being able to manage my own time and to be like, actually, like there have been a few periods for me this year moving from Cape Town to London and like, having had some like real challenges in that transition of just being like, I really don't have capacity to be 100% on right now. Mm-hmm. And I kept having memories of when I was back in banking and would be going through a breakup or like something would be going on. And I just have to like plow through. And it made me think, like a lot of the work that I do with people is around emotional processing and around like moving fully into your emotions and the importance of finishing emotional cycles. And it's like, how are people meant to do that in a world where, to the point you made earlier, there is no time like to fully grieve anything or to fully move through anything that life throws at us? It's just like, just push it all down and carry on.
Absolutely. What we need for our mental health and our well-being is not in alignment with the way the Western world runs.
No.
It's really not.
No. It's like heartbreaking because I also don't know what the solution is.
Well, I mean, part of it is being able to work for yourself and have that freedom, isn't it? Mm. You know, like that's what I really appreciate now is being able to get up like I did today and went and had my nails done and then went and sat in one of the beach bars and had a beautiful goat's cheese salad and had my laptop, so I just got my laptop out and then started working and did that for a few hours. And you know, I think that's just so much more restorative because I'm still working, I'm being productive and doing the things that I needed to do today, but I can do it on my timetable and where I want rather than everything being dictated to. You know, as a school teacher, you've got no flexibility around that. You're in the classroom with set times and then you've got a massive pile of marking to do afterwards. So it's a world away from what my life was. But not, you know, not everyone can work for themselves, can they? It's, you know, some people need to work for organisations. And I guess it's about trying to find the ones who actually do care more about your well-being if you can.
Mm. And if you look back to the version of you that you were before and the huge shift that you've made to where you are now, how has this experience shifted your relationship to like purpose or personal expression?
I think the more I've personally developed in all the areas that I've developed, I've realized what incredibly powerful work it is. And I'm really passionate about like being a coach trainer. I love coaching and all of that. But actually, it's made me really go into more women's empowerment stuff. And my specialism was resilience, surprisingly, in my dissertation. Originally, I niched on that because I'm so, again, also have a lot of passion for helping people to build resilience so that it protects them against developing mild to moderate mental health and just helps you to be stronger and to get through the challenges of life, which and successes of life. But then I've more moved into this like women's empowerment because I think I see how different I am from 6 years ago. And I mean, hugely. And there's so many steps that's taken along the way of peeling back the layers and peeling back the layers. And, you know, and then taking embodied action. I just did all the learning and then hoped that would magically be better in the beginning and then realised that actually there was more work to do. I think a lot of people do that. It's like, I've read all the books, why am I not fixed? And it's like, no, you have to take aligned action. You have to embody it too. So then I went through the whole trying to embody it all. And then you see just how powerful and impactful it is and the, you know, how much more light and successful and everything that I feel now. And then you kind of want that for everyone.
So. And I feel like the piece around being book obsessed and like reading all the books and listening to all the podcasts, I say as we record a podcast, but about like doing all the like absorbing all the information, which I definitely did, is also partly because that's so trained into us through the schooling system. It's like, if I can be a good student and I'll learn all the stuff, I would pass an exam on personal development. Yeah. You know, like I would be able to regurgitate all the stuff and I would pass the test. And it's like, but if there's no actual embodied change, then there's no change. And I remember a client of mine saying to me, she was like, that people have to recognize in doing this work, like the hardest part of it is actually making the behavioral change in your life and like seeing yourself going into old pattern and going like, I'm not going to go that way. So seeing myself going into fixer mode or parent mode and being like, nope, not going down that road. I'm going to go the other way. But to your point, like that is actually what moves the needle. Like putting boundaries in place, noticing where we're overextending. You can read all the books in the world, but until you start making like the tiniest of embodied change, nothing will shift.
Exactly. And part of the reason why when you advertised your, sort of podcast and looking for people, you know, you talk about liberation, and that the course that I deliver is called The Liberated Woman. Like, oh, we're obviously, you know, there's just this alignment here. And actually, that was the homework I gave them last night, was to take embodied action. Like, yeah. You know, you've got a limiting belief, you're rewriting it, you're reflecting on how you want that to change, you know, rewriting it and positively reframing it. But then equally, what's the embodied action that you can take to help reinforce that new belief?
Yeah.
So I said, they've got a week. And I said, we have a WhatsApp. And I'm like, right, post in the WhatsApp. You know, what's the belief that you're going to embody, and what's the embodied action? And then I'm so excited. I'm like, what's it going to be?
Yeah. Oh my God, totally. Like I had a woman, I ran a retreat in May and I did an integration group for that. And one of the women was like wanting to put herself out more online. And every time she did like an Instagram story or something, I was like, yeah, because I could see all of the stuff inside of her that was like, I don't want to be seen. I don't want to do it. It's like, yeah, but once you do it and you sit with the fact that you're like, I'm feeling so much fear and I feel so contracted, but I'm going to do it anyway. Like it stretches it. And I think for a long time, because I come from like trauma healing background, I think I had this belief that I would get to a point of like, I would have processed enough trauma that somehow it wouldn't feel uncomfortable anymore to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is true that the charge reduced, mm-hmm. like it wasn't quite as crippling to move into some of the spaces that had felt uncomfortable for me, but it still feels uncomfortable. Like it still feels a bit scary. But it's like, once we recognize like, oh, this fear is not an adult fear that I actually need to listen to. This is like ancestral or childhood or whatever. Like, can we hold the part of us that's afraid and still step into the new behavior?
Yeah, absolutely. And I talked last night about, you know, you're rewiring your brain, aren't you?
Mm.
If you think about that, these neural pathways that you've got around this limiting belief that you've had for a long time, you've revisited that thousands and thousands of times. It is strong. It's a strong neural pathway. Like you've been building it your whole life.
Yeah.
You've been giving it time. And so if you're going to build new neural pathways, and that's a new belief about yourself, you're going to have to keep revisiting it. And like you say, taking the embodied action and reinforcing it. And it's going to take work. You're not just going to do it once and there it's gone. You've got to build that up to be stronger than the other one. That's going to fade away the less you revisit it. So if you think about it like that, then it's, you know, it's easy to be like, right, I'm putting the reps in. I've got to build this.
Yeah.
This new one to be stronger than the old one.
It's like going to the gym.
Mm.
Like it really is. And like, I know so many of my clients have said to me with like relational stuff, especially like, but I've already looked at this. Like, why has it come up again? I'm like, because you've been practicing this other way for the whole of your life. And you've been working on this new one for the last month. So
yeah.
It's like, it's going to take a little bit of time. Yeah.
Sure. And then it shows up in a new and expected place.
Exactly. So. Exactly. Yeah. And having made the shift from teaching to now living in this beautiful, white, shiny, light home that you're in right now. Yeah.
I bought last year.
Oh.
Dream home.
What has this move taught you about what freedom really means and what it costs?
Well, I think there's two types of freedom as well. It's that internal freedom from doing the work, which has just freed me from so much like negative self-talk and negative spirals and all of those things, and the hyperachiever in me that's always looking for external validation. It's helped me to overcome a lot of those. So, and then the freedom in my schedule to live a life that's a lot more balanced. And that was one of the big things I wanted. I want a healthier lifestyle that was more balanced. And it is now. Like I would say, I don't usually start work until sort of 10, 11 in the morning. Now I just get up and walk the dog and go and have a coffee and then come back and shower and get ready. You know, so I've got a lot of freedom with my schedule, and that is amazing. So the cost is, you're not next to your family and friends anymore. All of my friends lived within three streets of me, you know, back in England. So I could call in, and I did all the time, around for cups of tea at everyone's houses, you know, and see my mum every day if I wanted to. Whereas, you know, I've moved, it's not a huge amount, you know, of distance away. It's 2.5 hours on the plane, but, you know, still, you just don't get to see those people. And there's a lot of fear around losing connection I had in the beginning. But I'm 6 years in now and I haven't lost those connections. I flew back last week and we went to the Oasis gig in Manchester. And it's like I've just never left. You know, I just slot back in, we have a great time, and then I fly back. So I think there's a fear of losing closeness. And maybe you do with some people, but the ones who really count, you don't. And I would say the other cost, I just happen to do so much inner work. If you're willing to do it, then and not let the fear take over. But the fear definitely was there a lot in the beginning, and that was, you know, quite draining. So yeah, I think there is something around that sort of not having the same support network around feels really big, and you can feel quite lonely in the beginning, where you're like, okay, my social calendar is empty from now until the end of the year because I don't know anyone.
Also quite funny because I really resonate with that. And simultaneously, like, having just moved back to London, when I was in Cape Town, I used to be like, I don't have any social plans. Like, my week is so empty. And then I came back to London and I was like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. It's like constant stuff. I was like, I gotta go back to the idea of not having anything on for months. It was actually quite nice.
Yeah, I totally relate to that as well.
Yeah. And the piece around, like, stepping back in and being like, oh, actually nothing's changed and I can just slot back in.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about the piece around, like, the fear at the beginning, I sometimes think back to the version of me that quit. And I think if I had told her that I was going to set up my own business, she would have run a million miles. Like, there was no way in hell she thought that she would do that. And I'm actually quite grateful that I didn't realize that at the time, because I think the fear would have overwhelmed me. But there is a piece for me, which I really recognize now. And I know that this isn't the case for everybody, but, like, setting up a business, my experience of it anyway, has been, there are a good few years of, like, fumbling around trying to figure out what the hell you're doing and not making very much money. And I think, like, if I had realized that, I probably would have beaten myself up less.
Absolutely. Because you see these people like, oh, in 6 months, I was earning multiple six figures.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, excellent. Well, I'm 3 years in. What to pay my rent?
Exactly. And to be like, there's actual... It's funny when I think about it now. I was talking to a client about this the other day because she was debating leaving banking. And I said to her, I was like, I'll be really frank with you. Like, I make less money now than I did in banking. 100%. Was it therefore a bad decision? No. Like, it depends on what you're measuring against. Like, what are you trying to optimize for? And that is a big question for people to sit with. It's like, if you're optimizing for, like, making money and sitting and having quite a comfortable life, don't set up your own business. Like, just don't. It's like, because yes, you can make probably more money in your own business, but it's also stressful and up and down and all over the place. But, like, if you're wanting to optimize for, like, personal freedom, insane amounts of personal growth, and the capacity to, like, travel a lot and whatever, do it.
Yeah,
but sure, your ego has to get out of the way very quickly.
Absolutely. And I say this to the coaches I train. I'm like, I'm 5 years in and now I'm making, you know, in the first 6 months, I made what I would make as a teacher in those first 6 months. Mm. So I'm like, now you can look at me now and you'd be like, oh, you know, that's how near. No, this has taken 5 years.
Yeah.
5 years of a lot of personal growth that was needed in order to be able to get me here. So it's not, you know, people want it within 6 months or 12 months. And some people get it quicker, of course, they have better networks, you know, or skills or whatever it is. But for a lot of people, that is a realistic time frame to be able to get the sort of income that you're really desiring. And, it, you know, are you that committed to it, to hang in there for 5 years where you don't know, you know, where the income's coming in? Like you say, it can be very up and down. And But then, like you say, that is what builds a lot of the self-trust and the grit, the determination, the realignment with your vision and your goal. And is it that important? So it's great development.
And like the amazing stories. Like I sometimes think, like over the last 5 years, the wild and weird experiences I've had personally from having moved around a lot, tried loads of different things, failed loads of times, like fallen on my ass, picked myself back up again. Like, would I have had those same experiences staying in my old world? Maybe, but probably not quite to the same degree. And at times I'm like, I'm here to live a really good story.
Yeah.
And to like feel like I really lived and I really put myself out there. And that to me feels really fulfilling. And to be able to like continually do the work to pull my ego out of the way and just be like, it doesn't even really matter that much. We're on a rock in the middle of nothing floating around. It's not that deep.
No, exactly that, for sure. And you know, I think now when you actually love what you do, even with all the challenges, I didn't know how I would survive till 68 as a teacher. Like, there was just no way. I couldn't have carried on for that long with the stress levels of the workload and the rest of it. Whereas now, I'm like, I can coach till I'm 80-odd. I'm going to get a little leather armchair and sit there and have little coaching chats with people. People will pay me loads of money by then because I'm going to be so experienced and qualified and know everything.
Totally.
So I don't want to retire now. And I think that's when you know you're really living your purpose.
Completely. I was on a call with, do you follow Byron Katie's work at all? Yeah. I was on a call with her the other day. She does those Zoom sessions. And I was like, she's 83. And she's like there as this crone, just like in a very beautiful, loving, compassionate way, I add, just like hammering this guy, being like, I was like, you are incredible. And you're 83. I love that. You are doing your dharma.
Exactly. And that's the thing. And that's how I see myself now. And I think, what a gift.
And I've got two final questions for you. What would you say to a woman who is craving change, but is terrified to begin?
I would initially, there's two things. It's like doubling down on your self-trust and figuring out what's at the core of that change. You know, what is it what is it they desire? Is it that freedom? Is it the balance? Is it more of a challenge? Is it, you know, there could be so many reasons that you want a change. Is it avoidance? Is it running away? Or is it running to something? And so I think, you know, doing those two things, if you really do want that change for whatever reason, and it's good enough to take a big leap, then, you know, doubling down on how you can keep your self-trust strong in that process. So that you see it through and you know, trust yourself and make a pact to yourself that you're going to see it through and you're going to do whatever it takes to make it a success.
I also love the piece you added about, is it avoidance?
Yeah.
Being like, oh, the gritty part of like, I have an escape artist in me at times that's like, just wants to just run away and do something different. And I have to really watch that part of me. So thank you. Yeah. And final question, I ask everybody this question. What does it mean to you to live a liberated life?
One that's true to yourself and not following the system set out by society that tells you you should live, which a lot of us get swept up into. And so really, I think liberation is just digging deep into who you are and not who you've been programmed to be. And then making sure that you live a life in alignment with that, whatever that looks like.
Could not agree more. Thank you so much for being here. It's been such a blessing. I came onto this call, in all honesty, I was like in a little bit of a funk, and I now feel much, much better. So thank you for your magic. And if people want to find out more about your work, where can they find you?
Naomi Morgan Official on Instagram is where you can find me. Yeah. And reach out and give me a shout out and we'll have a chat. Love it.
Amazing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute joy.